I could work for you on this project.
Now Bliss was blowing on the surface of her tea, watching the ripples bounce off the inside of the teacup.
I can work hard, and I can keep a secret.
He decided to play the sympathetic son card.
It pains me to see my mother working so hard on something while I can do nothing to help. I'm sure you can understand.
Bliss tilted her head quizzically.
No, not really.
She turned to Ulsa.
Will he be a security risk?
No,
Ulsa said hoarsely.
Excellent.
His mother was vouching for him. If the guild had said he could work there, surely no one else would have any problems.
I'm glad,
she said.
I wanted to leave his mind intact.
In the cold, a drop of sweat rolled down Ulsa Greyweather's cheeks.
You brought it here.
Of course I did. Don't be silly. It's in my coat.
Slowly, it dawned on Calder that he might have jumped into a cauldron that was deeper and hotter than he'd expected.
Do you know what we do at the Black Watch, Calder Martin?
Bliss asked. She had tilted her tea saucer up on one side and was trying to spin it like a top.
I'm taught that you study the elders in order to defend the Empire against them.
The saucer clattered to the table and she picked it up, trying again.
What do we do, though? What have you heard?
She sounded as if she herself wasn't sure.
I imagine you study ancient texts of the elder days, search through ruins, old journals, that kind of thing. I've heard that you look for elder cults and bring them to justice.
Those were all safe guesses, fueled by Arter's teaching and Calder's own textbooks. When he surreptitiously read his mother's belongings, he got the impression of a woman who spent most of her time researching and the rest traveling. Finally, Bliss got the saucer to spin on its edge.
Why would we need to search through ancient journals, Calder Martin? We can study the elders now, here, on the scalpel and scope.
He couldn't tell if she was joking or not, but he smiled to show her that he wouldn't be easily fooled.
I'm sure their remains still exist, but it can't be the same as when they were actually roaming the...
Calder trailed off. The saucer, instead of slowing down, had begun to spin faster and faster. Bliss wasn't touching it. Indeed, she seemed not to notice. With an audible whoosh, one of the other diners burst into flames. He jerked his head over to get a closer look, but the woman seemed fine, flipping her news sheet over to read the back. Something slithered behind the counter, dragging wet tentacles across the tiled floor. When he looked closer, he saw no tentacles, no trail of slime. Had he imagined it, or was it lurking out of sight? The windows in the front of the shop shattered, spraying shards all over the room. His eyes snapped to them, but the glass was smooth and whole. All the while, the saucer spun faster and faster. A wisp of smoke rose from the tabletop. Bliss took a sip of her tea and then turned the cup upside down. Nothing spilled.
If you want to play on our side, you should at least know the game. The elders are not gone, Calder Martin. They're not dead. Most of them are not even sleeping. They are here, all around us, and the only ones standing between you and their endless hunger are a handful of soldiers in black.
A dark fog rolled in through the walls, billowing closer and closer. He jerked back, almost knocking his chair over, and spun around to run, but the fog closed in from all directions. Something moved in the darkness, a misshapen shadow. A wet piece of meat, warm and sticky, slid down his back, and he fumbled with his coat. But then a hand reached out of the fog for his face. He jerked back, raising his arm to shield his eyes. The saucer fell to a stop, clattering on the tabletop. Everything was normal. The fog was gone, the tea shop spotless, the air clear and the lights sunny. Except that the other diners had vanished. Only three people were now within the shop. Two seated women and one young man, standing alone and shivering, all three wearing black. Bliss replaced something in the inner pocket of her coat, something that looked like a spike of yellowed bone.
We can't afford to hire people part-time, Calder Martin. There are things waiting for us in the dark places of the earth, and you will either stand with us against them, or you will stand aside.
Shaking, sheathed in sweat and trembling, Calder forced a smile.
That sounds like a challenge.
The Blackwatch guild head took another sip of her tea.
It can be challenging.
I still want to help,
What he wanted was to run home and curl up under his bed until he stopped shaking, but he couldn't back down now. Bliss tossed something down on the table. It was a metal badge, a little smaller than the tea saucer, marked with the crest of the Black Watch. A squirming mass of tentacles overlaid by six inhuman eyes.
"Welcome to the Black Watch," she said. "I'm glad I didn't have to tinker with your mind. I like Ulsa, and I don't think she would have been happy if I had accidentally killed her son."
Bliss looked around.
"I don't see the shopkeeper. Should I leave payment on the table or wait until she returns?"
"I will take care of it, Guildhead,"
Ulsa said.
"Don't worry."
Bliss nodded precisely.
"I see. Then I will pay for the tea next time, because that is fair. Now I will leave, so that your son can express his fear to you in private."
After the guild head left, Calder dropped into a chair. Not the seat Bliss had used. That one he nudged away from him with his foot. He couldn't seem to stop trembling.
"I'm sorry,"
he whispered eventually. His mother looked almost as shaken up as he felt.
"I had no idea she was in the city. She was supposed to be gone for months, capturing a nest of crawlers down in Erin."
Ulsa gathered herself, jabbing a finger at him as though she meant to skewer him with it.
"And that's why I tried to keep you away from my work. I should have listened."
There were a few more moments of silence between them. At last, Ulsa cracked a smile.
"I knew you'd end up in a guild."
When he finally returned to the house and endured a lecture from Arthur and a stern glare from Voris, Calder made his way up to his room. Jyrene was waiting for him in the hall outside, almost bouncing with excitement.
"You made it,"
she said.
"I knew you would when your mother caught me. What was it? Was it a ship? What happened?"
Mute, Calder pressed the Black Watch badge into her hand. He ignored her gasp of shock and her string of further questions as he pushed his way through the door, crawled under his bed, and curled up in the dark, shivering. Chapter 9. Present Day.
"I can't believe there's nothing here,"
Nabarius said as they anchored outside the island. Calder pulled on his hat, checked his pistol, and loosened the cutlass sheathed at his hip.
"Surely the island is disturbing enough for you on its own."
The island resembled nothing more than an expanse of pale, flabby flesh, with fronds of black seaweed growing here and there like patches of hair. In the distance, 10 arched towers curved together in 2 rows of 5. Between the arrangement and the yellow-white color of the towers, it resembled the ribcage of a giant. As far as Calder knew, it could have been exactly that. He wasn't about to make assumptions when it came to an island haunted by a great elder.
"It is all right," Urzaya called. "Everyone exaggerates. That is what makes a good story."
Nabarius tossed his black curls behind his shoulder.
"I tell you, this island and the sea around it were both crawling with abominations. I was not exaggerating, was I, Tristania?"
The Silent One shook her head once.
"You see?"
"I could never doubt such enthusiastic testimony,"
Andal said. His round white hat shaded his eyes, his suit was spotless, and he had both pistol and sword buckled at his hip. The silver pendant of the white sun hung on his chest, glistening in the noon sunlight. Nabarius smoothed out his suit, which today was a dark, subdued shade of blue.
"I suppose I shouldn't question Providence. This makes it much safer to go ashore."
Calder focused on his vessel, extending a ramp down. It hit the island's shore with the smack of wood against flesh instead of crunching against sand. This island continued to disturb him for reasons beyond the obvious. Not only was it frightening to behold, there was no gradual transition between sea and land as he had expected. The ship could get within 5 yards of the shore without problem. Based on what he read from the Lyathaton, Calder discovered that the bottom of the island actually curved upward, as though it were floating on the surface of the water instead of resting on the ocean floor. Like a giant corpse, bobbing on the ocean. No use worrying about it now, he thought. For the moment, the eerie island served their purpose admirably. He could get closer than he had ever dared to hope, and he wouldn't need to send the witnesses ashore in a rowboat. It meant that, if he had to abandon them, at least he wouldn't lose a boat. The Chronicler and his Silent One were all the way down before they realized that no one else had followed them. The crew of the Testament stood on deck, dressed for battle. All except Petal, who must have stayed below deck. Calder hadn't really expected her anyway.
The day isn't getting any younger,
Nabarius said impatiently. Andal finished lacing up one of his boots.
Neither are we.
No one else moved. For the amount Nabarius was paying, Calder supposed he owed the man an explanation.
Good hunting, Nabarius. We brought you here, as agreed. Now we will secure the shore while you search for your artifact. Feel free to take as long as you need.
The chronicler's expression darkened, and Tristania patted him on the shoulder.
What if Shara decides to attack us while we're running around on our own? You should run back to us,
Urzaya suggested.
As fast as you can. You get back here, and we will protect you. This was not why I hired you, Captain Martin.
Calder widened his eyes, adopting a surprised expression.
Isn't it? I was under the impression that we were supposed to deliver you, at which time you would find the artifact on your own.
I was under the impression that your crew would provide me with assistance and security.
It will be difficult to assist you if we don't know what we're looking for.
Nabarius tapped his thumbs together, thinking.
I can see why you'd be reluctant, he said at last. I have somewhat kept you in the dark, so to speak. For instance, it's possible that I may have understated the scale of this operation.
Andal stepped forward, putting a hand on his pistol.
Explain yourself.
But Calder had an idea, a premonition, maybe. He reached into his coat, pulling out a spyglass, and examined the crest of the island. At first he saw nothing except the island's grisly geography, but after a moment, a few dark spots rose up from behind the hill. 10 figures walked up from the other side, dark silhouettes in black coats.
Light and life, Calder muttered.
Nabarius sounded supremely proud of himself.
I wasn't planning to pick up a shovel and dig for myself.
The men and women in black walked closer, and Calder waited for a look at one detail, the metal crest pinned on the breast of each coat. His heart sank as the details sharpened into visibility. A nest of tentacles overlaid by 6 inhuman eyes. The Elder's eyes. Crest of the Black Watch. Calder folded his spyglass and tucked it back into his coat.
Change of plans. Now we're definitely staying on the ship.
Andal squinted into the sun, watching the black-coated stranger's approach.
How is that a change of plans?
Before, I was open to persuasion. Now I am possessed of the firm and unyielding conviction that we need to stay aboard. If you'll excuse me, I'll be in my cabin, filling out the paperwork to legally change my name.
Minutes later, from his cabin, Calder heard muffled voices as the watchman and Nabarius exchanged greetings with the crew. He forced himself to relax. Andal would speak for him, and he could trust his quartermaster to cover for him. As long as he had the presence of mind to not mention Calder's name, they'd be fine. And if the watchman asked, well, it wasn't like Calder knew everyone in the whole Blackwatch Guild. What were the odds that someone he knew would be on this island at this moment?
Captain Calder Martin,
a man called from outside, and Calder sighed.
We would like to request your cooperation in this matter, sir. My commander wants to speak with you personally.
Calder emerged from his cabin with a charming smile. He adjusted his hat and ran a hand down his coat, as though he had only stepped inside to make himself presentable.
Of course, of course. I needed a moment to compose myself.
Andal, gather Petal. We're headed ashore.
He was rewarded with a rare look of surprise on his quartermaster before the man headed down to the hold to carry out his orders. Calder marched down the ramp, his crew trickling along behind him. On the shore waited the 2 witnesses and most of a dozen Blackwatch, each of them standing casually. They didn't act like an armed escort, which was a relief. At least none of them seemed to hold a grudge. Nabarius wore a smug look, arms folded.
I'm glad you decided to join us, Captain.
I couldn't miss the chance to learn about your mysterious artifact, could I?
You've been so coy about it for these past weeks, and I do love surprises. Calder smiled cheerily in the chronicler's face. The watchman that seemed to be the leader, a white-haired man in a rumpled uniform, nodded to Calder.
Pleased to meet you, Captain Martin. I've heard a lot about you.
Calder winced.
I was afraid of that.
I don't hold a young man's foolishness against him. Who hasn't broken out of a prison or two?
That was surprisingly understanding of a member of the Black Watch, though it did make Calder wonder about the old man's past. So, what have you heard then? The old man met his eyes. They are on the right side. Everything else is secondary. Calder looked around the group and saw the same respect on 9 other watchmen. He wasn't prepared for the emotion that welled up inside of him at that moment. For a moment, he thought he might tear up. How would that affect their picture of me, I wonder? He cleared his throat. Thank you, Watchman. I appreciate your understanding. The old man gave him one quick nod as though that were the only response he had expected. Nabarius, meanwhile, silently worked his jaw before forcing a smile.
Let us abandon this beach before more children show up. I need to speak with your commander on a matter of some urgency.
That reminded Calder of a question. Excuse me, Watchman, but who exactly is your commander? A woman in a black coat spoke up.
This outpost is commanded by Ulsa Greyweather, Captain Martin.
Calder wondered if he could make it back up the ramp before they caught him. Ulsa looked much the same as when Calder had last seen her. Poised and controlled, with a spotless uniform, her hair combed absolutely straight and falling down her back. She might have worn a pinch more gray in her hair, perhaps a few more wrinkles, another scar or two, but it had been over a year since he'd spoken with his mother. Part of him had expected to be facing a stranger. He stood before her in her own tent as she sat back on a folding camp chair, much like the ones Calder kept aboard his ship. She looked him up and down, sipping tea.
Where's Shuffles?
She asked. It mostly sleeps during the day. I thought it would be safer if I left it aboard the ship for now. Besides, it will follow me if it wants to. He forced a laugh, but she kept surveying him as though she expected to fit him for a new coat afterward.
All right, then, she said. Now, where's Jerry?
The question caught him like a slap. He should have expected it, but he'd been trying to avoid thinking of his wife for so long he hadn't prepared himself. I hope to find out soon, he said. She put her teacup down on its saucer, a little too forcefully.
She ran off.
Calder would never get away without telling his mother the story, so he sat down on the edge of Ulsa's cot.
We were attacked. Nabarius says it was a consultant.
He initially planned to tell her only the most relevant details, but she asked enough questions that she soon pulled the full story out of him. When he finished, she was squeezing her teacup in both hands so hard that he expected it to shatter.
That which sleeps will soon wake, she repeated, disgusted.
You know what it means, I assume.
Calder nodded, anger warring with worry. He wanted to shout at Jerry until she felt the same pain he did, but in order to do that, he had to get her back. Ulsa looked as though she were ready to kick her desk over.
And I didn't see it years ago. There were suspicions around her father's disappearance years ago, but I never...
She shook her head to clear it.
No, I'm sorry. I can't imagine how you must feel.
Calder decided to change the subject before he broke down entirely. He and his mother had never had the sort of relationship where he cried and told her all about his feelings. No reason to start melting now. Something of a coincidence, isn't it? Running into you here? I was afraid it would be bliss.
Oh, she's coming,
Ulsa said in a dry tone, causing Calder's heart to sink further into his stomach.
And what makes you think this is a coincidence? I'm the one who told Nabarius to hire you in the first place.
In Calder's mind, his whole voyage suddenly took on an entirely new meaning. If Ulsa was the one arranging everything, then she must have a reason. This whole time, he'd thought it was his own guildhead. And Cheska was more than likely to have recommended a job with no plan or ulterior motive. Not his mother.
I assumed it was Cheska who got me the job, he said. She was the one who put me in touch with the passenger and negotiated terms.
Ulsa grimaced in distaste, taking another sip of tea.
Once again, Cheska and I have found ourselves working together. You can imagine my delight.
Calder sat quietly for a moment, putting the pieces together. Cheska Bennett, head of the Navigators Guild, wouldn't be involved in anything that didn't affect the entire guild, or the possibility of her walking away ridiculously enriched. He assumed Nabarius was working on behalf of the witnesses, and if his mother was here with a contingent of watchmen, that meant at least 3 Imperial guilds officially represented. What's more, Ulsa Greyweather had climbed ranks over the years to become the right hand of the Blackwatch Guild. Second only to the guild head herself. if Olsa and Bliss were involved. He remembered something Cheska had burned on the inside of his hold weeks before. Not just for you, but for the Empire and the Emperor. Mother, Calder said seriously, what is Nabarius looking for? Olsa leaned back in her chair.
Eternal life.
Calder waited for more, but it seemed she wanted him to ask questions. That's very dramatic, but I was hoping for an actual answer.
This island, as you may have noticed, is not normal.
His mother stomped the ground, which gave off a sound like she'd slapped human skin.
According to our records, it began as the land where Nekothi's corpse fell when she was defeated by the Emperor and Estus Six. The dead mother's body landed here after her death throes shattered the land around her. Over the past few years, the island has disappeared. In a way, it's like Nekothi is swallowing up the land around her, remaking it into a new body.
Calder shivered, gently pulling his heels off the ground and resting them against the legs of the cot on which he sat. It was one thing knowing that an elder had made the island look and feel like flesh. You had to expect such things if you wanted to sail the Aeon. But actually standing on the corpse of a great elder. So the Emperor left an artifact here.
Something like that. You see, after the Emperor's death, many things that were once mysterious became clear. For instance, we found the secret to his immortality for the past 1,500 years.
She gestured to her neck, as though to an invisible noose.
He always wore a silver chain around his neck. You may remember it.
Every detail of Calder's one face-to-face meeting with the Emperor was seared into his memory. A chain looped around the Emperor's neck, bright against his dark skin, whatever pendant it carried disappearing into his robes. I do.
When the Imperial Guard discovered the Emperor's body, that chain was missing. Only days later, it was delivered to Blackwatch headquarters by persons unknown.
She shuddered at the memory.
We found a cage suspended from that chain, and inside the cage, a gray heart roughly the size of your fist. It had been pierced through by a blade, the vast majority of its power drained away, but our examination made it clear what it was. A heart of Nekothi, the dead mother. He was soul-bound to the heart of a great elder, and whoever killed him knew it.
Calder began to laugh. At last, years after the man's death, he finally discovered that the man hadn't been the spotless avatar of all the goodness in the world. No, he was a parasite, clinging to an elder's heart to preserve his own life. The Luminians had suggested for centuries that the Emperor lived on because of his spotless virtue and insurmountable will. Everyone in the world believed it. Well, Calder had seen into the man's mind before. He'd known that the Emperor was anything but pure goodness and light. Still, this was the ultimate justification. His laughter died down as Olsa sipped her tea, watching him. He finally wiped tears from his eyes and caught his breath again.
You have no idea how good it feels to hear that.
I'm glad you're in such a good humor about it,
Olsa said,
because we need him back.
Calder glanced over his shoulder in a sudden panic, as though he expected to see the resurrected Emperor behind him.
You can't bring him back to life, can you?
Olsa snorted.
If we could, he wouldn't have needed to live forever in the first place. He could have waited to die and then have us resurrect him. No, what we need is a new Emperor.
It was faint, but Calder caught the scent of opportunity here. If they were seeking to raise a second emperor, then this could be the chance he'd waited years to seize, the chance to change the empire once and for all. But he had to play the safe hand, slowly gathering as much information as he could.
Why so?
It's becoming clear that the empire cannot survive without an emperor,
Olsa said grimly.
The regents are doing what they can, but it's the nature of humanity to divide. If this continues for too many more years, we will have four separate kingdoms instead of one united empire.
Sedesthenes once said, as it is in the hearts of men to seek authority, the path to unity can only end in one empire. Calder understood the concept, though privately he didn't see the problem with having four separate empires. People already referred to different regions separately. Isirians considered themselves separate from the Aranen, who competed for status with Heartlanders. What would it matter if the different regions governed themselves and then came together for the common good? Either way, that wasn't the answer he was looking for. That's all well and good, Mother, but what are we looking for on this island? She raised her eyebrows, as though surprised he hadn't figured it out yet.
Another Heart of Nekothi. We can't very well raise a mortal man, Emperor, can we?
Disgust washed through Calder like a tide. You want to bind someone else to the heart of a great elder? You're Blackwatch!
Ulsa's eyes hardened.
This is exactly what the Blackwatch was founded to do. Turn the powers of the elders to the good of humanity. You'd remember that if you...
She was interrupted by a voice calling her name from the front of the tent. She pushed her way out, and Calder followed her. It was the old man from earlier, still wearing his long black coat. He bowed slightly when he saw Ulsa.
We've secured another possible candidate, Commander. Nibarius wishes to have you inspect it yourself.
Ulsa patted the side of her coat, where Calder knew 7 awakened iron spikes rested.
Guide me,
she ordered, and the watchman set off without hesitation. With nothing else to do, Calder followed. Jirene Tessella Martin lay back on the mattress in her cell. Her imagination had failed her in this case. The ominous mystery around the consultants made her think that they would torture her and drop her body into the ocean. They had actually treated her quite well for a prisoner. Her cell was 5 yards by 5, which was bigger than the cabin on the Testament. The mattress they gave her was thin but relatively comfortable, far from the pile of filthy straw she'd expected. They fed her twice a day, and the room was lit by the even, warm light of a quick lamp. It was placed high out of her reach, true, but it banished the shadows far better than a candle. She had requested 2 books so far, by leaning against her bars and shouting. She never saw a guard, but the books appeared in her cell within a few hours.
Say what you will about the consultants, they know how to run a comfortable prison.
She only had 1 complaint about her cell. It could be easier to escape. They had covered her head in a hood when they took her here, but they didn't bother to hide the fact that they were taking her underground. There were no windows she could conveniently slip through, no guards to bribe. She had faked illness a few days before and found a bottle of medicine delivered with her next meal. As she did at least once every day, she closed her eyes and stretched her mind out for her vessel. The earring was somewhere on the island, she was sure, but not close enough for her to call its power. She kept trying, stretching her mind out for the energy she felt she could almost touch. Maybe Calder could get something out of this sensation, some vision or clue as to the vessel's location, but Jerry was no reader, and she eventually lost focus.
They'll have your vessel sealed,
a voice called from down the hall.
The architects aren't foolish enough to let a soulbound keep her powers.
Jerry scrambled out of her cot, moving to the wall of bars that separated her from the hallway.
Is that what happened to you?
It was a rare chance to get to know her neighbor. She intended to take advantage of it. A smile infected his voice.
Perhaps. I'm not sure I should give too much information to the enemy.
That hardly sounds fair. You know about my vessel. I think I should know at least something about you.
Her neighbor went silent, and Jirene assumed he'd given up on her. He seemed like the curious sort, to a certain degree. He would toss her a question every day or two, maybe make a comment, but he stopped responding any time she tried to make it a real conversation. This time, though, he'd responded. That had to be a chance.
My name is Lucan,
he said at last.
And yours?
Jerry clung to the hope of interaction, as though merely speaking with another human being would see her free from this cell.
Jirene.
Jirene. Are you from Vandinius, Jirene?
That's an astute guess, Lucan. And you, Aranin?
He sounded amused.
Not exactly. I hear you tried to betray us to the elders.
This time, it was Jerry's turn to go silent. How had he known that? Was she actually speaking to a guard, and this was the consultant idea of an interrogation? No, the guards didn't speak to her, and she'd heard Lucan moving around in his cell the past 3 weeks or so. Unless a consultant was willing to stay in prison for 2 dozen nights in order to ask her a handful of questions, he should be a genuine prisoner. He must have overheard pieces of her initial interrogation when they stuffed her in here. They'd asked normal things, mostly. Who she was, what was her connection to the Sleepless, did she have any hidden powers? So Lucan knew who she was. That could work to her advantage. She could use this opportunity to clear up some misconceptions.
Not a betrayal, no,
she said.
The elders aren't our enemies. They're strange and eternal. Some say they have knowledge from beyond the stars, and they certainly have powers greater than anything we humans can control. Shouldn't we learn to live alongside them instead of fearing them as we do?
Jerry hated having nothing more than his voice to go by. She longed to see his face, to judge how he was taking her speech.
But the elders enslaved our species long ago,
Lucan said.
Do you propose another age of worldwide slavery?
At least he sounded curious. Unlikely though it might be, perhaps she could make an ally.
Not at all. When the elders kept us as slaves, we were primitives, savages. We initially fought them with tools of bone and rock, and it wasn't until the war had gone on for years that the Emperor discovered bronze tools. How could the great elders, with their millennia of wisdom, work with a race like that? They had no choice but to keep us as slaves, as we use animals for their strength.
It felt good to have a conversation with someone who would actually listen to her, like stretching muscles long dormant. She had once held high hopes for Calder, since he lived alongside creatures like Shuffles and the Lyothaton, but he proved more stubborn in his fear of elders than most. Maybe if she'd tried to persuade him earlier, shown him everything she'd learned. Well, if she survived these prisons, she would teach him the truth. Everything she'd done would directly benefit him, after all. Lucan mused audibly from the other cell.
So, you suggest that, in modern times, we're advanced enough to strike a bargain with the elders.
He understood. Exactly. In effect, we do it already. The Black Watch learns more about elder biology every day, and the navigators need elder spawn guides to cross the Aeon. Even the Emperor—
Jerry caught herself. She wasn't supposed to know about the Emperor's immortality. She recovered quickly.
Approved of such research. There's room enough in this world for humans and elders both. Folk belief indicates that the elders want nothing more than destruction, but that's clearly untrue. When they were in charge, they didn't destroy. They built a great civilization. They didn't eliminate humanity, though they must have been tempted.
Her neighbor was silent for a minute or two. She thought she heard the scratch of a pen against paper.
I have always questioned the ancient accounts of the elders,
he said at last.
And for good reason. Practically the only details we have of the great elders come from their greatest opponent.
More pen scratching.
You're not a reader, are you, Jyrene?
How had he known that?
I don't see how that's relevant to the subject at hand.
I'm sure you don't.
Then he was quiet, and none of her questions could coax him back into a discussion. She sat on her mattress, leaning the back of her head against the stone wall. Idly, she twisted the end of her braid in her hands. She kept braiding her hair because she had nothing better to do with her time. The invisible guards had provided a comb after she called for one.
What do I have to do to convince someone?
The conversation with Lucan had gone well, she thought, but the hatred of the elders ran deep throughout the whole empire. What would it take to break through almost 2 millennia of indoctrination? She still remembered herself as a little girl, terrified as she followed her father to a secret meeting. She'd stared into an endless void as her father and a cabal of other men and women communicated with another power, ancient, wise, and palpably strange. Jerry shivered. She almost felt as though she could feel that dry cold of another world here, in her cell, and it seemed that the light of the quick lamp didn't reach quite as far as it used to. She turned around. Were those shadows gathering against the wall?
Lucan,
she shouted.
For your own safety, do not make a sound.
He didn't respond, which she decided to take as agreement. Jerry stood, her back to the bars, facing the darkening end of her cell. Cold snatched at her skin as she straightened her hair and brushed out her clothes, making herself presentable. They had given her a red shirt and pants, obviously modeled on the uniforms of Imperial prisoners, but Jerry happened to think the color flattered her. She stood with poise as the back wall fell away, revealing an endless void swirling with colorless lights. A voice slithered out of the dark, whispering directly into her ear.
Jyrene, the heart has been found.
Relief drew a smile on her face.
We're on schedule, then.
We have gathered our forces. We must secure the heart before the Black Watch can bind it to one of their choosing.
That shouldn't be difficult. They don't have a candidate ready, do they?
The voice hissed, an invisible messenger conveying the irritation of the sleepless cabal on the other end.
The candidate has already arrived, and the guild head is on her way.
The head of the Black Watch, Jerry was sure. Bliss. She'd heard of the woman from both Calder and the Sleepless, and they all made that particular guild head sound terrifying. If her presence alone was enough to force the Cabal's long-laid plans off schedule, then she must be frightening indeed. Jerry coughed politely.
I know you're on a schedule, but when can I expect to be removed from here?
Truth be told, she hadn't expected the consultants to keep her alive as long as they already had. She only wished they would give her vessel back before they killed her so she could make a fight of it. At least that would save her from having to explain the truth to Calder. A dozen distant whistles sounded from the void, and an icy wind swirled out. She wondered if that signified debate among the men and women at the far end.
Continue to wait, the voice whispered at last. We will soon have a powerful peace on the island. If you survive, it will see to your freedom and to your continued service.
Elders and their servants could often have strange notions of time.
How soon exactly could I expect?
Soon,
the voice hissed as the void began to shrink.
Soon, soon.
The stone wall reappeared, rimed with frost. The quick lamp's light penetrated the corners of her cell unobstructed. She heaved a deep breath, collapsing back down on the mattress. She rubbed her eyes, ambushed by sudden tears. Calder was on Nakothi's island with the heart, she knew it. He was on that island and in danger without her to protect him. If he only realized how many threats she had destroyed over the years without him ever knowing. Now he was out there alone, unprotected. He would die thinking that she betrayed him. And, more than likely, she would die in here without a soul to mourn her. The Empire would continue on its course of destruction. Her family would never see her body. It was certainly enough to cry about, but she forced the tears back. Weeping never saved anyone. And she had a job to do. She closed her eyes, seeking her vessel out once more. One of these days, someone would make a mistake and carry her earring closer. When they did, she'd burn her way out of this cell and show the consultants why they should never have captured her alive. From the next cell, Lucan cleared his throat.
Can I speak now?
You're safe,
she called back. If the Sleepless had known that someone was close enough to overhear their message, they would have undoubtedly sent an Elder Spawn killer to eliminate the witness. It was fortunate for Lucan that he'd listened to her advice.
What was that?
He asked, sounding fascinated rather than repelled. She was only too happy to explain. Chapter 10. No. I will not teach you awakening. However, I will explain the essential concept in order to satisfy your curiosity. When you awaken an object, you bring to that object a measure of awareness. You bring it to life, so to speak, though an inanimate object cannot move around like you or I do. Arthur Belfry, Imperial Witness, taken from a letter to his pupil, Calder Martin, 14 years of age. 12 years ago. In the weeks that followed his meeting with Bliss, Calder came to a new understanding of reading, of carpentry, and of the Black Watch. For one thing, he learned that none of the older watchmen seemed inclined to teach him about the guild or explain anything, at all.
You either know what it's like to face down an elder, or you don't,
his mother explained to him.
If you don't, then nothing they tell you is going to prepare you. If you do, then nothing they tell you will teach you anything new.
And I don't, Calder said.
No, you confronted Bliss and her Spear of Phalos. They all know that, so you're one of us.
They could try acting like it, Calder grumbled. But each morning, as he worked on the testament, Calder understood that he had crossed some invisible line without realizing it. The men in black coats talked openly around him, making jokes about crawlers or children of Nakothi. He didn't know what they were talking about, but that didn't matter. They were talking, and he had never heard those terms as an outsider. The fact that they spoke so freely around him was itself evidence that he was trusted. After he realized that, he noticed other things. They were obviously used to the whims of their guild head. Normally, the guild required an application and interview process, but Calder learned that Bliss was prone to circumvent or overrule that procedure as it suited her. It was little more than a formality now, and the watchmen all reacted the same way to his appointment. Upon learning that a 14-year-old boy had been elected to their guild as a reader, each and every member replied, "Welcome to the Black Watch." Over the course of 1 week, every day a different watchman would walk up to him and hand him a foot-long iron spike, then walk away without a word. He hung them from loops inside his coat that seemed to be made for that exact purpose, though no one would tell them what the nails themselves were for. At the end of the week, his mother presented him with the 7th and final nail. Every member of the Black Watch stopped what they were doing, gathered around, and applauded. Then they dispersed back to their jobs.
"That's as much ceremony as we see in the Black Watch,"
Olsa said.
"Sad, really. I hear that in Canatalia, the alchemists throw a grand festival when a student completes their certification."
Calder held open his coat, revealing the 7 nails.
"I'm honored, but what do these do? They're obviously invested, but I can't tell how."
He didn't pick up on visions from the nails exactly. Instead, he sensed a deep ocean of purpose, focused by intent he couldn't fathom.
"Oh, they're not complicated. Stick all 7 of them into a lesser elder, all over its body, and it will stay bound and paralyzed."
"Do I have to get them in the heart, or—"
Alsa touched her own set of nails through her coat.
"Tradition says head, heart, spine, and all 4 limbs. But some elderspawn don't have heads, hearts, limbs, or a spine, so you try and do your best."
"I see. Why all the secrecy, then?"
"We're not supposed to speak to the initiate about the nails before he has all 7, but I almost warned you. I wouldn't read them too deeply if I were you. And for light and life, don't try to awaken one."
"Why not?"
Calder asked, suddenly desperately curious to find out what would happen.
"Because they were already awakened, long ago. Normally, if you try to awaken something twice, nothing happens. In this case, there have been other effects. Don't try it."
Alsa shivered, and Calder swore to obey, at least until he knew more about the nails. As he warmed up to the Black Watch, he learned more than he had ever wanted to about the testament, and about using reading as a construction technique. For one thing, it was harder than he had ever imagined. With most objects, you simply willed it to perform better at its given task, and the object absorbed that intent and got better. A knife invested to cut meat would slice through a steak as if through butter, and glass invested to prevent shattering might survive a hailstorm. It was a very simple and straightforward process, though only readers could tell what change their intent really made without careful experimentation. Most people invested their intent into objects blindly. Calder couldn't understand that. It was like learning that most people painted without ever having seen a single color. But the ship was an entirely different beast. Each board, nail, rope, and nut had to be invested for a specific purpose. He couldn't focus on one purpose at a time, either. He had to take into account the intent and significance bound into the ship as a whole. He started off by investing a nail binding 2 boards together, and that was simple enough. Then he invested the 2 boards for strength, which made them too rigid and brittle. The nail driving them together wouldn't break because of his intent, but neither did the boards bend. Given a single tap, the whole thing exploded into splinters. Next, he tried investing the boards for durability rather than strength. It took hours of focus and all his mental energy, but he eventually got them how he wanted them. However, he ended up with a pair of boards that would bend like rubber without breaking. Anyone who stepped on them would sink inches down into the deck. When he finally gave up, Olsa showed him how it was done. You had to invest the 2 boards and the nail together, as a whole, as well as separately. It required him to focus his intent three ways at once, which gave him such a headache from reader burn that he was useless for almost 2 days afterward. He returned to work with a renewed vigor. Now he could finally understand why Alsa could do so quickly what took him hours. If he practiced like this all day, he would be more skilled than a magister by the time he'd finished the ship. Then he saw the suicides. He was moving his way down the railing of the Testament, laying his intent into every inch of the starboard rail. He needed to focus, but he didn't necessarily need to see what he was doing, so he often found his eyes wandering up to the west side of the harbor, to Candle Bay Imperial Prison. Somewhere up there, his father was locked in a cell. He imagined the prison cells as dank and lined with stone, but he didn't know for sure. He'd never been able to visit. For 18 months now, the receptionist had turned him away.
I'm sorry, that prisoner is under delicate medical care. That prisoner is being held in special confinement today. That prisoner is under disciplinary review and cannot receive visitors at this time.
At first he tried every week, then every month, and now he was considering sending a strongly worded letter to the Candle Bay warden. From the deck of the Testament, he glared up at the distant windows, imagining he could see his father's red hair within. Then, one of the windows slid open, and a woman crawled out head first. At this distance, he couldn't make out any details except her long hair and red one-piece prisoner's suit, but the sight was enough to destroy his concentration and ruin his reading. What was she doing? Was she trying to climb down the wall and escape? His questions were answered a moment later when she plunged headfirst, landing among the rocks below. Calder's involuntary shout startled the nearby workers and watchmen, who all turned to look at him. He pointed straight at the prison.
That woman jumped!
And then a second figure crawled out the same window, falling to his death on the rocks. A murmur went up among the workers, and there was a general shaking of heads.
May their souls fly free, someone said. But then they all went back to work.
When a third and a fourth prisoner jumped out the window, Calder rushed around the deck looking for someone to help. He finally found a grizzled old watchman sitting on a barrel, munching on a sandwich.
Four people have jumped from that window in the last 30 seconds,
Calder said, trying to sound calm. He pointed as another man fell.
Five now.
The old man shook his head, letting out a sigh.
Bad business, that is. Bad business.
He took another bite of his sandwich.
That's an Imperial prison, isn't it?
Candle Bay Imperial Prison.
He kept shaking his head, brushing crumbs from his mustache.
I wouldn't even keep an elder locked up in an Imperial prison. Not in the capital, at any rate. Emperor only knows what they do to the prisoners in there.
Calder had no doubt that the Emperor did know. Back at home in the Greyweather Library, Calder recounted his story to Gyrene. With many whispers and glances over his shoulder, he told her about the Candle Bay suicides, about the receptionist never letting him see his father, and how he was almost sure that his father's cell was overlooking the bay. Gyrene looked over at their chaperone, Voris, who was silently reading The Adventures of Soulbound Silas.
You know what you need to do,
she whispered back.
You have to rescue him.
It wasn't a new idea, of course. He had pondered and toyed with the idea of breaking his father free since the night Roderick was taken. Once every few weeks, he'd take out the Emperor's key and roll it between his fingers, silently promising himself that his father wouldn't have to tolerate prison much longer. But between his studies with Gyrene, his job working on the Testament, and his sudden appointment to a guild he'd known almost nothing about, well, life had gotten in the way. It was easy to tell himself that he'd use his invested key to free his father like a hero, but it was quite another thing to give up his comfortable routine and put in the long, hard, boring work. What door would he unlock? How would he get his father out of an unlatched cell unseen? All that had changed when he witnessed the bodies on the stones of Candle Bay. Who knew what cruel experiments that emperor was running on his father? He couldn't tell Gyrene too much, though. He had to seem reluctant, as if he'd be giving this project a few more weeks of thought.
I don't know anything about the prison's layout. Maybe if they would let me in.
You're a watchman now, aren't you? Why don't you... You know.
She waved her hands in the air, vaguely.
T-
Tell them it's a Blackwatch issue. What will they know?
Calder had considered it. There were two problems with that plan.
First of all, the receptionist knows what I look like. I've been trying to see my father ever since he was locked up. Second, even if I could walk straight in the door with a Blackwatch badge on, they're not about to let me walk out with a prisoner.
Jirene nodded sagely.
I know what you need.
In spite of himself, Calder was intrigued. Jirene often came up with unexpected bits of knowledge. He wouldn't have been surprised if she knew the exact right procedure for a jailbreak.
A partner, she whispered. A confidant. You need me.
Calder looked at her in her turquoise sitting dress and matching earrings with her excited smile, and he almost couldn't resist the urge to let her help with the plan. He needed more help, after all, and this was a chance to work on a project together, a secret project. But this wasn't a game. Failure would see them locked up in Candle Bay alongside his father, at the best. At worst, they could be killed in the attempt, or... An image came to his mind of Bliss pushing a shard of bone back into her black coat. He didn't know how she'd react to hearing that one of her newest watchmen had been arrested trying to break his father out of prison, but he couldn't imagine that she'd take it well. She might take punishment into her own hands. He'd rather face Imperial justice.
I do need you, Calder said. I can't plan something like this on my own. I need someone to help me gather information, to plot the escape, and to cover for me with Mother. But when it comes to the actual operation, it's better if I go by myself.
He pulled a line from a play he'd recently seen.
There are some things that a man has to do for himself, he said solemnly.
Jirene was quiet for a few seconds, staring at the back of her tattooed hand.
The night before my father left, he came to me and said he'd be going away on important work. And he told me that, no matter what I was told, he absolutely wasn't dead.
Her eyes rose, meeting his.
3 days later, the Blackwatch came to my door and told me he had been killed in the line of duty, that the means of his death was confidential. I don't know what happened, or if he's still alive, or if he knew he was about to die and he told me so that I wouldn't worry. But at this point, if I had any idea where he was, I'd go find him.
And Calder had no idea how to respond. He sat looking into her eyes for far too long. She finally broke the contact by tossing her braid back behind her shoulder.
And don't give me that a man has to do things for himself. We saw that show together.
At this point, he didn't know how to refuse her. He felt that he was teetering on a cliff, with the safety of home behind him and a deep unknown ahead. Until this point, his plans had remained firmly in the realm of fantasy. But if he told her he was going to free his father, he had the uncomfortable feeling she'd hold him to it. With a deep breath, Calder took a step into the unknown.
You and me, Jirene, we'll do it together.
Her eyes sparkled and she clapped him on the shoulder.
Jerry, that's what my family calls me. Anyone who lets me in on their prison break conspiracies gets to call me Jerry.
In the corner of the room, Voris slapped his book down on the table. He glared at them over his glasses, raising a finger to the front of his scarf.
Shh!
For the moment, Jerry and Calder returned to their studies. Chapter 11. Present Day. Calder stood in what passed for a hole on this nightmare of an island, an ugly, gaping wound the size of a crater. It looked as though the Blackwatch had gouged a warehouse-sized scoop out of the dead elder's flesh, leaving the edges oozing blood red and infection green. Holes dotted the wall like empty veins, from small enough to hold a fist to openings bigger than a capital sewer pipe. Tendons crossed from wall to wall like pinkish wires, and they'd had to duck and dodge in order to walk down to the crater's center. There, at the center of a taut network of veins and tendons, pulsed a gray-green heart the size of a fist. Six watchmen with their black coats worn loose stood around the heart, sweating. They held pickaxes and shovels, and their clothes were covered in sickly ichor. Each of them had a haunted, dead look that Calder could well understand. He couldn't imagine the stomach it would take to dig out a mine by hand in soil that looked like flesh. Whatever his mother was paying them, it wasn't enough. Nabarius fell to his knees in front of the heart, a picture of heroic awe.
Is this it?
Ulsa held out a hand as if to read the heart, but she shuddered before she got anywhere close.
Check for yourself.
Tristania had her back turned to Nabarius, and she held the handle of her whip in one hand, though she kept the rest of it tucked into her coat. Her bandaged body was poised and alert, her eyes up to the edge of the crater as though she expected to see a threat emerge at any second. On instinct, Calder almost read the wall to see if he could detect incoming threats, but he stopped himself before moving his hand. Ulsa hadn't moved within a foot of the heart, and she still looked vaguely sickened. He didn't want to know what it would feel like if he directly read the body of a great elder. He'd seen men who had been reduced to nothing more than drooling husks after reading elder artifacts. There were many ways he could imagine himself dying, but starving to death while lost in a hallucination was among the worst. Nabarius continued kneeling on the sticky ground, heedless of the stains he was leaving on his knees. He cupped his hands around the heart, closing his eyes and inhaling deeply.
"It's vast and strange," he said in awe. "I can feel the unending life of the dead mother."
Calder wondered if he noticed the contradiction. For his part, he didn't want to be any closer to the heart than he had to. Immortality had its appeals, but if he had to shackle his soul to an elder's, he thought he would prefer death. The white-haired watchwoman had a quick, quiet word with Ulsa. She turned on Nabarius, who was still kneeling over the heart in obvious ecstasy.
"You verified the heart, then, Witness Claiborne. Our part here is done. Now let's cut this free and get to shelter."
Calder eyed his mother, and then Tristania, who had not relaxed her vigil. Ulsa Greyweather was not prone to unjustified panic. If she wanted out of this crater, she had a good reason. "What's the hurry, mother?" While the watchman went to work trying to sever the tendons, it must have been harder than it looked, as one man swung an axe into the pinkish wire with no effect, Ulsa walked over to her son. She spoke in a low voice.
"Since we set up camp on this island, we've been under constant attack from the children of Nakothi. I've had twice as many men guarding as digging, but these past few days, it's been slowing down. Hours before you got here, they all ran off, vanished. We've seen neither skull nor claw all day."
To him, that seemed like the opposite of a problem.
"When I take the testament close to an island, we often find that the wildlife is too quiet. There are many things in the Aeon that can sense the Lyathaton approaching."
One of the watchmen stood over an unbroken tendon, calling for a saw. Ulsa grimaced.
"I hope that's what it is. Your Lyathaton hails from Kelerak, and certain records suggest that he and Nakothi were anything but friendly. But if that's not the case, then it means they're gathering their strength."
"They would need a leader for that."
"Thus far, they haven't shown any signs of one."
She shrugged.
"But the more you learn about the elders, you start to realize how little you actually know. One of the Eldersborn may have spontaneously developed the ability to command the others, or they may have established psychic contact with something higher up the ladder. Either way, I'd feel a lot safer if we were out of this wound."
Calder looked up to the bleeding edge, toward the camp where he'd left his crew. They would be safer together than he would be down here, but he couldn't help but worry. They were understaffed here in the case of any attack. Just him, his mother, the two witnesses, and half a dozen watchmen with tools. The workers cheered as the saw broke through a tendon, and the man holding it got to work on the next pink wire as the others started digging at the flesh around the heart. One man leaned, panting, on his pickaxe. Two women dug, where another man worked the saw. The white-haired watchman leaned over toward Ulsa as though to whisper in her ear again. Calder counted one more time before he realized what was bothering him. That was 5 watchmen accounted for, not counting his mother. 5. He pulled his gun from its holster, though he kept it pointed low and to the side.
"Mother," he whispered, "how many men did you bring down here?"
3 men, 3 women,
she said. She paused for a moment and then whipped her saber out of its sheath.
"We're under attack,"
she shouted, and blood sprayed all over her black coat. The white-haired watchman collapsed, missing a chunk of his head. The musket crack echoed between walls of flesh. Heart pounding, muscles running with lightning, Calder grabbed his mother by the shoulder and shoved her into the sticky wall as another bullet passed through the space where her ribs used to be.
"They're aiming for you,"
he yelled. If the watchman hadn't stood so close to Ulsa, she would have taken the first bullet herself. Ulsa pushed him off, diving for something the old man had dropped, a musket.
"Not just me,"
she said, taking aim at the edge of the crater. Tristania stood over Nabarius, brown coat spread like a pair of wings. Something smacked into the fabric and then fell to the ground, a musket ball. It must be invested against bullets, though Calder had never been able to make bulletproof clothing work. Fabric wasn't a sturdy enough medium. The material pulled itself apart after taking a shot or two. The Silent One stood as though she never meant to move again, whip falling from her hand and coiled on the ground. Nabarius took his time, walking over and scooping up the abandoned saw.
"Excellent work, Tristania," he said,
as he leaned over and continued sawing the heart free. Ulsa took a shot up the crater, wreathed in gun smoke, and for the first time, Calder got a look at the enemy. They, too, wore black. But instead of coats, these were dressed in form-fitting suits of pure black. Many of them wore strips of cloth over their mouths, and others wore completely black masks. He tried to count them, but he found it more difficult than he'd expected. He only caught glimpses of them here and there. A black-clad elbow, the flash of a knife, the spray of blood, a half-shrouded face as one of them shoved a body into the crater. All the bodies he saw belonged to Watchmen. Seconds into the battle, all five of the workers were down, and the Nabarius would have been dead 10 times over if not for Tristania and her bulletproof coat. Ulsa stood behind the shelter of a gash, poking her head out to fire her musket every once in a while, then ducking behind cover to reload. She didn't seem to be doing any good. The familiar thrill of danger charged him, and he grinned. He saw no obvious guild symbol or uniform, but he was certain who they were. The consultants were here in force. At last. He had business with one consultant in particular. Calder straightened his hat, keeping his pistol in one hand and drawing his cutlass with another. He drew in a deep breath, then bellowed a single word.
"Urziah!"
An animal roar answered him from the edge of the crater. A single black-clad body launched from that point, flying entirely over the bowl, landing on the other side with an audible crunch.
"Ah," Calder said, straightening his hat. "There you are."
Then he started running for the side. The crater was gently sloped, so he could climb his way out if he had to, but the workers had left knotted ropes dangling down to assist his ascent. He had to sheathe his cutlass to climb up, which made him regret drawing it in the first place. A bullet struck next to his shoulder when he was about halfway up, sending up a splatter of bloody fluid. Calder dug his feet into the wall, pulling himself up faster. A black, wrapped figure leaned over him, pulling out a long steel knife. Calder hung on the rope, raising his pistol, desperately hoping to make this one shot count before the consultant sliced his rope. But there was one other move he could try.
"Clear the way, please,"
Calder shouted. A blonde cannonball slammed into the consultant, sending the smaller man tumbling over Calder and into the pit. Urziah Woodsman leaned over the edge, blood splattering his scarred face. He showed a gap-toothed smile and reached one hand down. Calder took it, and the gladiator pulled him effortlessly to the top.
"I have not found the assassin, but there are many other consultants,"
Urziah reported.
"I have killed 3, but it is hard to find them sometimes."
"I can tell," Calder muttered. A group of 3 watchmen filed past a clutch of the waving seaweed, and a consultant leaped out of hiding, killed 2 of them, and ducked behind one of the Blackwatch shelters before the 3rd man noticed his companions were missing. Calder raised his weapon as soon as he saw the disturbance.